Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the theater industry's biggest movers and shakers. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the writers Hilary Bettis and Caroline V. McGraw. They're two members of the new class taking the reins of the Kilroys, the collective of producers and playwrights that's behind The List, which name-checks underproduced plays by women, trans, and non-binary writers. Bettis and McGraw and a dozen others were named to the new class of Kilroys last year to continue the fight for gender parity across American stages. The latest edition of The List came out just last week. Bettis and McGraw are here in the studio with me to talk list building, awareness, where we stand now, and what work remains to be done. Plus, cake drops. Hi, Hilary and Caroline. Thanks for being here.
Hello. We're so happy to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys could be here. I wonder if we could start off talking about a little of the history of the Kilroys, just for people who don't know, and what it is and how it came about. And then also when you first heard about them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Get in it.
Caroline, let's start with you.
No.
Caroline, wait.
One of us. Oh, boy.
Well, I mean, the Kilroys started in 2014.
Right.
It was really, I think there was just so much frustration about the underrepresentation of women in the American theater, and everybody was really tired of, you know, there was this conversation, there was a summit in D.C. around that time, and one of the artistic directors said, well, there's not enough plays by women in the pipeline.
Yes.
And I think that really like sparked a lot of frustration in the industry because we were like...
Because in fact, it's not a pipeline issue, as Rachel Chapkin said at the Tonys, right?
Yes. Yes. It 100% isn't. And just even working as a Kilroy for the past, you know, 6 months or so, we've seen the pipeline is...
It's massive.
Can a pipeline thrive? It's thriving.
and I just want to clarify too that, you know, when I say women, we're also talking about like female identifying gender non-binary trans writers who are all underrepresented across the board.
Across the board, yeah.
And so that's what we're really trying to advocate as Kilroys for.
So you're talking directors and crew members and all that stuff. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. The playwriting is the jumping off point, and it's something where if you visit our website, thekilroys.org, you can see some pretty sobering statistics from, you know, they're still sobering, but as recently as I was just looking at the 2012-2013 most produced plays, I think there were two women on the list of 10 playwrights.
Right.
And even since then, in part, I think, due to the Kilroys, but also just hopefully a nationwide push, the statistics are getting better. But
they're still pretty dismal.
They're very dismal.
They really are.
And even and also it's like we're not talking 25 years ago. We're talking like looking at 4 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
They're terrible.
Yeah. So the Lilies and the Dramatists Guild does the count, and the 2018 count... There was, I believe,
the count is basically figures about
this. Yes, exactly
what we're talking about right
math.
Now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yep. Statistics.
Yes. Yep. And there's since the Kilroys came onto the scene, there's been I believe it's like 8% jump from 22%, but that's still nowhere near parity.
Right.
Yeah. Not even.
Is a big close. For the last.
It is.
Considering how slow a lot of sort of theater programming
yeah.
moves,
it's
a
true.
Pretty good. It does indicate that you guys have had an influence.
Yeah.
Over the,
yeah, which is really exciting. Right.
Yeah, it really is.
And so, when did you guys first hear about it? Then was there a was it when it was announced or was it?
Yeah, I heard about it right away in 2014 because I had two plays I believe that year that were on the honorable mention list.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Same with me. I heard about it when maybe this is what happened to you. Four of my plays were nominated, and they okay. reached out to me in 2014, and they reached out to me to ask, like, they're like, you know, have any of these plays had a production or had more than our criteria for being on the list is the play has to have either been unproduced or just had one production. So they wanted to check in with me to make sure. And I was like, ooh, what's this thing that's yeah. happening? And yeah. they're like, watch out.
Yeah.
And
it was, exciting.
Yeah, it was really fun. It had a very grassroots,
yeah.
fun, anarchist sort of feel to
yeah,
it. It was kind of like, this thing is going to happen. When is it happening?
Yeah.
It was really exciting.
Right. But really, really hip and really underground, and it felt yeah. right away like it was a cultural, I don't know, a movement that was happening.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The founding Kilroys behind it were like such
oh my gosh.
Awesome people that I have like been obsessed with since becoming a playwright.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. And they came out of... their history, as I understand it, is they came, they were sort of met at a party in L.A. and
yeah.
kind of, I mean, it sort of is, as you were, Caroline, you were talking about the sort of the grassrootsness of it. Actually, you both were,
yeah.
too. And it sort of, it actually was a grassroots movement, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
is,
yeah,
this
absolutely.
This is an entirely volunteer position for
it
you guys.
It is, 100%. And it's been amazing being part of it. And also, like Hillary said, like the founders are just 13 of the coolest people working in theater and film and television today. And so to like get to sort of see as some of those, you know, duties of being a Kilroy have transferred over, the incredible amount of work that goes into it. And
yeah.
The Kilroy is the...
It's a lot of work.
They like to say, the originals like to say that each of them spent about as much time as a new play would take. Over
wow.
doing Kilroy's work, that a new play was not lost.
And not just written, but like
yeah.
the workshop
yes.
process, the
right.
readings,
yes.
like from
the whole deal. Yeah.
to world premiere.
Yeah, absolutely. That they have given that amount of
yeah.
time to it, and gladly and happily.
Yeah.
But it really is a lot of really like joyful, amazing work. But they
right.
they really and they put a yeah. great structure in place for us.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, they started taking applications for the new class because they were so exhausted, right? Is that what I understand?
I think that's part of it.
But
I think they also wanted, like, I think that they recognized the importance of this work being much bigger than them
mm-hmm.
and being much bigger than about who they as individuals were, and that it needed, in order for it to grow and thrive, it needed to have new perspectives brought into it. And
yeah.
so I think that, you know, and so this is something we've already talked about is like, well, maybe this is just something you do for 5 years and then you pass it forward.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, I don't think any of us are planning on doing this for
right.
no,
right.
15 or 20 years
yeah.
either.
Right.
It's
what
a big
is,
ask.
Yeah,
yes.
And what is that work? Tell us about it. Because, I mean, there's the
wow.
list,
oh, goodness.
Which is...
So there's the list.
Which is how many plays, finally? Or is it limited to... do you have a set number of plays that you were choosing?
No, so what ended up happening?
I should say also, I realize that just in case, the list was also inspired by the Blacklist, which
yes.
is probably a thing that a lot of listeners have
yes.
heard of. Which is,
yes,
you
absolutely.
Know, underproduced, or in fact, unproduced screenplays, like the best unproduced screenplays.
Yes.
And so this is that for.
And asking
yes.
industry,
yeah.
asking
right. and
the,
call,
you know,
yeah.
nominators
yeah. like the people who are, you know, people who are in the theater trenches, the, you know, literary right. managers, artistic directors, associates,
producers
right. people
actors.
Who are. Reading
agents,
yeah.
No agents
are not
okay.
allowed.
No agents, no managers.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Nobody with
they
ulterior
wish.
Motives.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But people have to read/see at least 40 plays a year
yes.
to be a nominator.
Okay.
So
yeah.
that we're really getting like people that are in the thick of who is out there and who is on the cusp of like the next
Yeah.
Amazing writers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I imagine for a lot of these nominators, 40 is like nothing. They have 40 is like their
That's like a week.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
No, absolutely. So yeah, so the, when something sticks out in their mind, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
Right. And so the work that you, that tell me about sort of what your involvement entails now that you've been doing
a lot
it for
of
6
emails.
Months.
Yeah. So many emails. A lot of what we're doing, well, so we've been, it's been all hands on deck for the list, even though we do have a dedicated list committee. You're on the list committee,
yes.
Hillary. So Hillary can maybe speak to the specifics of what's been going on over there.
That actually is one of my questions, is what goes into putting that list together?
I mean, so we have our list of nominators. We had a list of about 300 to 400 people that was passed down to us from the previous Kilroys. We went through that. You know, are people still in theater? Are people still at these positions? Are these emails still valid? And we really wanted to make sure that we had nominators from all 50 states.
Yes.
So that was something that we really took upon ourselves to make sure that, like, the entirety of the United States was represented in the kinds of plays that, you know, are out there and being created. And then we send emails out to the nominators asking for three to five submissions.
They get a Google form.
Yeah.
So it's and it's,
so it's
specific
anonymous.
To yes, it's anonymous and it's not something that they can kind of pass around.
Yes.
Right.
It's specifically for them and only them.
Yes.
Okay. Does everyone respond, or how many people respond?
I mean, you know better than I. I feel like most people respond.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I feel like the people that really we didn't hear from were people that are no longer
at those jobs.
Are active in the industry.
Or are agents and managers now.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And then we spend, about a month just, like, curating all of those responses.
Yeah.
And taking the most nominated plays.
Yeah.
And that's how we build the list. So we actually, like, have... No.
Yeah, we don't read all
we
of
don't
these
read
plays.
Them.
Okay.
We
that was
are
one
not,
of my questions. Yeah.
We are not. We wanted to be as neutral as possible. We are simply there to curate the numbers that come in and then to talk about them as much as possible and hopefully get all these plays produced.
Yeah, the only thing that we do, not the only thing we do, but one of the things we do is we just fact check, basically. Like I said, someone reached out to me, to you, Hillary, in 2014 and beyond to say, hey, have these plays, did we miss it and this play has had 6 productions and is no longer eligible? So we do verify that the plays do reach the criteria of the list. And then this exciting thing about the list this year is all of the playwrights on the list itself have never been on the list before.
Yeah, that was the first thing that we wanted to do to really make our mark. Was really lift up all of these voices that maybe people haven't heard of yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is really exciting.
Yeah, and people, I took a look at the nominations. People were pretty good about it. I didn't really catch a lot of people who tried to sneak in someone that, you know.
And it's really exciting because some of the writers on this list are people that I've been just such a big fan of for a long time.
Yeah.
And so I'm really, really excited that their work is really going to get this sort of exposure because I think it is long overdue.
You both mentioned that you've had plays on the honorable mention list and on the list itself. What is the effect of a play being on a list? You've both had plays.
I've had been lucky to have plays either on the list or honorable mention list every year since the Kilroys came out, which is amazing. But I think just about every one of those plays has since gotten a production. I mean, the doors that the list has opened for me, which is part of why I wanted to be a Kilroy to pay that forward. But it's been incredible the exposure that it's given my work.
Right. Yeah, I have not been on the list itself, but in 2014 when they were soliciting nominations, I had several plays that were eligible, and they were the Kilroys like published kind of who had been who had. You know, gotten a few nominations, and even that was just astonishing. People were reaching out. There was a whole lot of, you know, community around it. It was something where, you know, and some of it is like, you know, social media based, but it was it was something where they really did. I think the Kilroys have always done a really great job in, even if you're not necessarily on the list itself, if you're an honorable mention or if you're affiliated with it in some way, just making the community around it is so exciting. Like,
it's really exciting. And I get a lot of emails from high school and college kids all over the country that are like, our teacher is teaching List plays and Kilroy's plays.
Oh, wow.
And will you send me plays? And it's incredible. Like, kids in, like, rural Iowa, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that it also just makes the conversation around plays by women, trans, non-binary writers just, I feel like it adds a shine to everybody's work.
Yeah.
Like, even you know, people who are, you know, there's 33 people on the list this year.
Yeah.
Well, so there's those 33 plays, which are incredible. But then there's just, like, people are talking about their favorite plays by women and non-binary writers.
And, like, they're seeking them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully people are thinking about it through the year as they're reading.
Yeah.
And kind of, like, bookmarking those plays for themselves.
Yeah.
The original group of Kilroy's was all in L.A., and this group is now bicoastal.
We are.
That was on purpose, I'm assuming? Is that, was that part of the was that a strategic decision, I guess is my question, to have people on both coasts?
Yeah, I think they sort of realized that New York is...
there's a lot of playwrights here and a lot of theater artists. And also, the L.A. Kilroy's parties are legendary. I had never been able to go to one, and I heard about it all the time. And I felt so, I was like, oh, I want to go. And then, so now we're going to make the New York parties legendary, too.
We're having a New York party this year. We're having a bicoastal party.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Which is very exciting.
I like that.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Will there be a simulcast? I don't know.
I can only assume, but yeah. What, and so as you guys have been talking over the last 6 months, what sort of things are you talking about to kind of further your mission? What are things that you feel need to be done?
That is really important to us, which was important to the old class of Kilroy's as well, and they certainly, you know, their work, the list in 2017 that was all women of color playwrights was part of that, but I think really expanding, you know, intersectionality, really making sure that, like, we're consistently having women of color, you know, and not, you know, and making sure that, like, Native women and, you know, South Asian women and women that might not even necessarily be, you know, that are even less represented. And,
yes.
And as well as trans writers, I think we're really wanting to push to find more.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that just making sure that the list is not... There's so many things in theater that's like, oh, it's a thing I have to get. Like, it's a thing I have to apply for or hustle for.
Yeah.
We don't want the list to be that. It's not a thing that's saying, only these 33 plays are the ones you should read. Don't worry about anything else. We want it to be part of a larger movement.
Yeah.
And to make people, you know, to just have people be excited when the list comes out and also do, you know, go the next step and find these writers and other writers. I think we're also interested in how theater is talked about in the media and how plays by women, trans and non-binary writers and writers of color are reviewed or talked about in the critical conversation.
That's
a longer term. Yeah, that's
bigger conversation.
That's something that we talk about internally, and it's something that I think who knows what form that will take.
It is, and you know, it's like plays can get productions. They can have, you know, a lot of buzz around them. They can be great pieces of work, and then, you know, there's still that wall that I think in general we're hitting with the way many reviewers talk about and look at these types of plays.
Yeah.
And sort of the makeup of who those reviewers are
is
a big part of it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that sort of leads me into my next question: is that you are both as working writers, what's your take on where the industry stands on these issues? That you're like, what progress has there been, and what still needs to be done?
I would say that I think that we're at a place where people know something wasn't working, right.
I think there are certainly in Hollywood as well, because I also work in television, and these conversations are happening
in the entertainment industry at large, right? Yeah.
But I think at first, I think maybe there was a little bit of a, like, take your medicine reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now, several years into this, we're seeing how popular, how important TV shows are by women and people of color, that they're not just like a niche audience, but they have huge, big cultural impacts that the people can have empathy for people outside of themselves, not just the white male perspective, and that they make money.
Yes. Right. Well, yeah, that's a big thing. I mean, most theater goers are women.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
Which is just to say that people want a diversity of stories, and
we want to see ourselves on stage. Yeah. We want to see our pain and our lives validated.
Yeah.
Hillary, you mentioned working in TV. You wrote on the last couple of seasons of The Americans, for instance. But for both of this is a question for both of you. Where does theater stand as compared to sort of Hollywood at large on this? Is theater behind or ahead or neither?
I think that there is more opportunity and risk to, like, risk-taking to be able to create stories in TV that I don't quite find in theater. But that said, I think theater is also the pipeline to Hollywood in terms of talent. So,
it's an interesting juxtaposition.
TV loves playwrights and loves theater actors, and they're sort of held on a pedestal in Hollywood. Uh-huh. And so the representation of these voices in our theatrical landscape is also about job opportunities in Hollywood. It's about economic opportunities in Hollywood. It's a strange sort of like the stories are behind, yet the people are like what's everybody's like hungry for.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it is very interesting to be sort of in these rooms talking in like film and television and have the sort of like, oh, you're a playwright.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, that never happens in a room. We're in a theater room. They're like, oh, you're a playwright. Great.
Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah.
It's very true. But there's still a lot of work to do in Hollywood.
Oh,
yes. Well, there's quite a ways to go.
100%. Yeah.
How have current events in the last couple of years, you know, with the Harvey Weinstein and Brett Kavanaugh, how have they sort of energized or galvanized, or what have they done to the kind of work that you're doing with the Kilroys?
Well, I think that on a larger, not necessarily specific to the Kilroys, but on a larger scale, that women and marginalized people are more comfortable being publicly angry.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not all of it. I'm just shrugged, but like, that's not all of it. But I think this
realization also that like, you're not crazy.
Yes, you're not alone.
You're not alone. Yeah. That like these things actually are happening in such a sort of perverse, ubiquitous scale that like, and now we can finally talk about it without that same level of fear. I mean, I think there's still a lot of fear in general, but
definitely. But it does feel like very slowly, but surely that there is some movement. But it is, you know, the Me Too movement has, I think, made people on it, like I said, like in a larger scale, just as you said, just you kind of don't have to go, oh, it happened to you. There's more of a conversation around it,
but
in the open.
Also, like, because I think it's, you know, we can talk about these experiences and say that this is like a big cultural issue that is happening and we need to deal with it, but we can do it in a way that's not like necessarily pointing fingers or shaming individuals either, so that everybody can sort of hopefully listen and hear and want to change the kinds of environments that we're in, because it's better for everyone.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think that is something with the Kilroys, is that we're saying, look at all this work. Like, it's a very positive, you know, way of doing things. It's like, here, look, and look at all these, look at these theaters that are doing this work.
Yeah, and like, I think that was a big part of the Kilroy mission was, we're angry and frustrated, and there are so many incredible writers that are not being recognized, but, like, we can't approach that with anger. We can't put people on the defense. We have to, like, do it with empathy and open arms and make it fun for people and make people feel empowered to be a part of this cultural change.
And it's cool to be inclusive. I mean, I said that in the lamest way possible. Hey, kids. But it is. Yeah. Like, it's really... The Kilroys did something amazing a few years ago where they... it was called the Cake Drop. And they sent, like, a big, beautiful sheet cake to all these theaters that had parody in their seasons. But it was just something that was like fun and a little bit silly, and it was like it was a fun award.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Without it being too, you know, it wasn't like stressful or something you had to like apply for or anything like that.
Yeah.
What do you consider the most urgent action item as you guys look ahead? Aside from the list, what do you feel like is a thing you want to really address kind of most urgently?
I think there's a couple of projects that are that we're thinking about. I don't know if we've assigned sort of like rank to them yet, but there's a lot swirling around.
I know we definitely want to talk about is ageism in theater, and that's something that we're going to go on a retreat.
We're going on a retreat.
We're going to hash out all of these things in the fall. But I think that's one of the big things that we've really been recognized as an issue in both theater and Hollywood. And how can we open doors for older writers as well?
Absolutely.
And his work is just as interesting and vital and
100%. And mid-career, women who hit mid-career and sort of don't have that "you're the next big thing" sort of shine on them anymore, but they're still making incredible work, and they're like doing the best work of their careers, and it sort of gets lost. And I think that that's something that we're very, very interested in tackling, talking about, bringing some light to.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about your own work. Tell us about what you guys are working on.
What are we working on? Gosh, I feel like I'm juggling so many things right
now. Yeah, I was trying to think of an answer to that, and I was like, staring at a screen.
So I have a pilot at FX and a pilot at AMC that I've been working on for, I don't know, the FX one about a year now, and AMC is pretty recent.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'm about to go staff on a show in like 2 weeks, but
can you tell us about it or not
yet? Can't say what show it is yet.
Okay.
And then I have
here in New York or in
LA? It's in LA, so I'm going to be in LA. I haven't told anybody yet.
Is that your first time
now everybody
going
knows
there?
Yeah.
Or have you mostly written here?
Yeah, all the writer's rooms I've been in have been in New York. And then I have a production happening at Roundabout this coming season in the Pell Theater.
What play is that?
A play called 72 Miles to Go.
Amazing.
It's about a family, follows a family over 8 years from 2008 to 2016. The mother's been deported, and it's set on the border. But it's really, like, I didn't want to write a play about the issue of immigration. I just wanted to write the, you know, quintessential American family that just happens to be in these circumstances. So the play is really following them as they, like, graduate high school and fall in love and celebrate their anniversary, and how do they hold on to intimacy and love and connection when they are separated by borders, and they can't because of the circumstances, they also can't actually physically be together. And so, like, one of the devices that the play uses is the mother is only on a cell phone throughout the entire play.
Oh,
and
wow.
So because I really wanted the audience to have that feeling of loneliness and isolation and not use any sort of theatrical tricks where we get to live with her point of view also, because I feel like that does a disservice to the reality that so many people in our country are experiencing right now.
Right. Wow. And Carolyn?
So I'm working on some TV-ish things that, you know, that like Hillary, not, you know, can't necessarily get more detailed on. And then next season at South Coast Rep, my play I Get Restless is going up. And that is a play about a woman who is in an accident on her honeymoon that causes her to lose 6 years of her memory, which includes her entire relationship with her husband, her postgraduate schooling, her mother's death, and all of the political things that have happened in the past 6 years. I'm very excited.
When does that happen?
That's going to be in spring of 2020.
And Hillary, when does yours happen at the
March.
Pell?
We open March,
in March
2020.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah.
I'll be out west, but I'll be back. I'll be able to see it.
I hope you do.
I can't wait. So we have big spring 2020.
Yeah, you guys are busy this spring.
Planned.
How do you think of, you both are doing TV stuff at the same time, how do you think of TV and sort of screenwriting fitting into your work as playwrights?
So I'm very pragmatic about TV.
I want this advice from Hillary. I'm going to get it live.
Okay, great.
I, like, theater is my heart and soul. I love writing plays. I love it. I live for writing plays. And so, but I also, I think, hit a point where I was really tired of being poor.
Yeah, I mean, even the most successful playwrights.
Yeah, I was really tired of, like, bartending 6 days a week just to scrape by and crawling home at 6 a.m. and trying to write plays on cocktail napkins while doing shots of Jameson.
It's very romantic, though. That's a good story to have.
Was not my experience of the day
22,
job.
It's not romantic when you're, like, 30. So for me, TV really was like, okay, well, maybe this is a way to support my theater habit. And I mean, I love writing for TV also. I feel very blessed to have gotten to work on The Americans for 2 seasons, which I think taught me, like, everything I thought I knew to be true about writing was completely challenged and torn apart in the best possible way working on that show. But I am, you know, I really try to carve out enough time every year that's for theater, even if it means turning down TV jobs, because I also see how easy it is to, like, get swept up in that world. Yeah, but it's really hard. It's a lot more challenging than I thought it would be.
This is
but
all
I
very
also,
helpful.
I've, like, never lost sleep over a TV job in the way that I have with theater.
That's funny.
I think that's where I'm like, okay, this for me is a way to pay the bills and continue to be a playwright. And so I don't know. I just don't have, like, the same – I love doing it. Like, I love telling stories. But I hope none of the producers I'm working with are listening to this.
No, they know. They know what's going on. They're excited. Right.
Yeah.
I would just say, and I don't have as extensive a experience as Hillary does, but I would just say that it's – I love TV for one thing, and it's very exciting for me to kind of work in a medium that babysat me while my parents were both working.
That's
we are. It just does feel like a time when, you know, ideas that I had even maybe like 6-7 years ago kind of would have been like, well, we can't really do that. Like you can do. Pretty much anything. Yeah, you can do anything. And it does feel like there's no idea that can't, you know, with enough care and attention, be something that can really translate to that to that medium. And that is very exciting. And it is exciting to have, you know, to have so many playwrights working and have that. There's a community that I can't speak to anything but, you know, kind of our generation. But it doesn't feel like that was the case for such a long time. And now you can just go out to LA and see all your playwright friends who are like writing pilots and working on a show, and it's very inspiring and galvanizing.
Before we go, can you each name one unproduced play of yours that you would love to see on stage?
Oh, what a great question. Oh, I would love to see my play Believeland on stage.
Believeland is an excellent title for one.
Thank you very much. It is about Cleveland, Ohio, my hometown, and a unknown, died too young beat poet from Cleveland named D.A. Levy, who my parents were both friends with him, and I was exposed to his work quite early, and it's sort of my imagining Cleveland through his eyes.
Excellent.
That's cool. Yes.
All right.
So this play called The History of American Pornography.
Ooh.
And so, let's see,
I
wrote it in 2014, and it's sort of this, like, stylistic, Brechtian, everything happens on stage, all the transitions happen on stage, there's a chorus, but it really follows this woman's life over 40 years as she, growing up in the porn industry. So her parents were Armenian immigrants. They moved to L.A., wanted to be filmmakers, ended up becoming pornographers by accident. But it's really about the search for intimacy when we've, like, commodified every aspect of our human existence and our bodies. And can people, like, find love and something deeper outside of all of that noise? And it's also about how, like, the bigger, like, cultural shifts, like 9/11, for example, had an impact on the porn industry because it's so much about our, like, deepest, darkest, you know, traumas and fears and anger, and for so many people, it's really like the only way to express all of these dark emotions. Yeah. It's really fascinating. I did like obsessive research when I was writing this play. And I've also like over the years had people like tell me their darkest like relationships to pornography because of this play. But it's something that I feel like, you know, when I wrote it in 2014, it was people were like, oh, this play is a little too risky. But I feel like now with like Ming Pfeiffer's Usual Girls and Dance Nation and the kind of plays that are being produced now, that it feels like this play could be done, could be seen now in a way that I don't think people were quite ready for it then when I wrote it.
It does feel like the last few years.
Which is exciting. I love those plays much.
It does feel like there's some people have taken these really amazing, I mean, I don't think of them as risks because those are all like amazing writers and we know that, but like it's something that might externally seem like a risk, but there are these plays that have bigger casts and are very theatrical.
Well, and they're about like what it's like to be, you know, coming of age as a young girl and going through puberty and sex and losing your virginity and all these things that were such taboo subjects for so long.
And that were seen as niche.
Yeah. And ooh, you're trying to be edgy when you're talking about your period, but you're like, it happens to so like many of us.
It's happening to most of the audience here right now. So, yeah.
Well, I cannot wait to see both those plays. You hear that, theaters and producers? Thank you both. Thanks for chatting with me.
Of course. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us so much.
That was Hilary Bettis and Caroline V. McGraw, two of the writers in the new class of the Kilroys. You can see the collective's latest edition of The List at thekilroys.com. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd be very grateful if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Or tell a friend. I'll be back next week with another new episode, and until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.